Mrs. Lambert, Reel 5. You're talking about elements of the code and cipher training, that initial training that you got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the machine, did you ever see that program about the Enigma? Well, our machines were exactly like that. I recognized it. I recognized the wheels. But what we didn't have were the, like, you know the old-fashioned telephone where you sort of plugged into things? They had these plug things on the side there, on the front. We didn't have those. Ours was just a straightforward machine, and that's what it was like. And it was really quite good because, to me, I enjoyed it because it was doing something specific, and this is what I wanted. I didn't want to be mending balloons for the rest of the
day. Was it impressed upon you that the work you were training to do was secret?
You yes, know, we had to sign.
The Official Secrets Act.
Secrets Act. In fact, I'm still on it, even now. But I mean, the reason I can talk about that is because it was on television anyway. So I mean, I'm not giving you the whole picture. Obviously, I can't. But I mean, I'm giving you enough for you to know what the machine was like. And then later on, I'll tell you a little bit more when we get into the Official Commission.
What time did your day start?
I think it was 9 to 5. I'm sure it was. I stayed with a family in Oxford, and they were a lovely family. We were all, wherever we went, we were billeted with families when we got our commission. And they were so kind. And of course, I had time on my hands. I hadn't got a boyfriend at the time, so I just wandered around Oxford, and it was gorgeous. But anyway, at the end of the course, we had to take this exam. And so the next day, down came all the tailors from London. Burton the Tailors and Austin Reed and all the rest of them with their tape measures and materials, because by this time we didn't get our uniform from a store, we had them made. So we had our uniforms made, we had to buy all our shirts, all our everything, and I bought them all from Austin Reed. And I'd always fancied myself in striped pyjamas, so I bought myself some striped pyjamas from Austin Reed.
So what exactly did you buy? What was made up of an officer's uniform?
Well, actually what you see is what we had, the uniform, the jacket and skirt, obviously, which is the main thing, and an officer's hat. And somewhere I've got a picture. Also, we had a battle dress top, because you didn't have to wear your smart top all the time. You did when you went out, but for work purposes, and trousers, of course, had trousers. And then your own underwear. Black shoes, grey stockings, which eventually turned out to be silk stockings. Could have been lisle stockings all your life. But we still had to do our own laundering, still polish our buttons. And as well as the uniforms, of course, we had all our brass buttons. And it was very smart because it was the proper material, you know, from the tailors. And on our lapels, we had A, because we were auxiliary. They don't tell it now, the wax, because they're not auxiliary, they're real. But we had these A's on it, all of us had A's on our lapels. And a nice cap with the RAF eagle. It was very proud, because it was really looked nice.
And on the sleeve, did you have an insignia for rank?
Yes, we had I started off with assistant section officer, and I'll tell you when we got to be promoted, that was quite something. But it was a thin band like a pilot officer, equivalent to a pilot officer. On each sleeve. And what else? We didn't have any medals at the time, so we couldn't put things on. So that was about all, really, on the jacket. Nice skirt. Looked very smart.
Did they give any lectures or talks on how to behave as an officer?
Yes. From Oxford, we went to Loughborough College. And that obviously was taken over by. Part of the college was taken over by the RAF, and we went there. I think it was there for a month. Teaching Loughborough, 42. RAF Officer School, the RAF Officer School. So it was about a month, wasn't it? 27 days I was there. And we learned all about, there wasn't just just this machine for code and cipher, there were all very many other devices which we had to learn. Which I never used, but we had to learn them anyway. I did use one of them, which I'll tell you about afterwards. If you hadn't got a machine, how you could send messages, who you had to send them to, how they went off, how they came back, how we had to do the logging. Everything was done on paper, coming and going. Who to send the ciphered messages to, which had to be sent out by signals. And from the signals, we'd get the coded messages in to decode, and they had to go to the group captain. Everything involved with code and cipher.
And you mentioned other machines. Can you describe or tell me about the other machines that you were now meeting?
No, it wasn't. This was the only machine. Oh. That was the only machine. The others were books. There was a book with, I can't really remember properly, but I know we had a graph. And we had to use this graph. It had little spaces in it, I think, or am I thinking of a child's game? It was something or other. We had a book, and we had a different piece of paper, and we had to put this paper on this to find out what the world was. It was a very slow process, but it was a process of ciphering, of coding.
And in this particular situation, for the days that you were there, was this still training?
Well, we did the admin training. It was all put away. We had to go to Loughborough. It wasn't just code and cipher. We had to learn all about the admin, which put me off admin completely. I was asked if I'd like to go in admin. I said, no, thank you. And that was really sort of being an officer in charge of a group of girls. Drilling, lectures, officer of the day, anything that a WAP officer is involved with when you've got a group of girls, a group of people who are new training. I mean, they all had different jobs, of course. There would be secretaries, nurses, administrators, all the various things that they couldn't do. It was down in Gloucester, the trip. But no, that's something else. Erase that. Forget that. No, this was Loughborough. You had to learn how to do all this as well.
This was part of your additional training when you were in Loughborough.
The
duties of an officer, in effect.
The duties of an officer, yes. And that took me to June. I went there in May, and that took me to June.
And you now are an assistant,
assistant section
officer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So after June, you moved.
I changed my number then. I was 890509 ACW. I am now 4695 Assistant Section Officer. I even remember that.
And presumably, lower ranks in male or female would have to salute you when they passed.
Yes, I always used to forget. I used to forget I was an officer. I was just somebody serving in the RAF. And I used to forget to such a point that after the war, I was passing Buckingham Palace. And one of the soldiers gave me a salute, and it wasn't until I went back that my God, he was saluting me, and I forgot.
So you weren't regimental, as they say.
No, we weren't. No, because the very job that we had, code and cipher, the regimental bit didn't come into it.
When you moved to Skegness in the June, was that then operational? You were in effect dealing with.
Yes, and I can't remember what they all had numbers, didn't I? I mean, it was 18 Balloon Centre. And then I can't remember what, if there was a number for the RAF centre, but in Skegness, we were stationed, the headquarters was in a hotel called Seacroft Hotel. And a friend of ours here, she goes to Skegness very often. And I told her about this, oh yes, and I looked through the brochure and it's not called Seacroft anymore, it's called something else. But that was our headquarters. And the group captain, everybody was in there. And that was, I was code and cipher officer, come signals, because there wasn't a signals officer, so I was signals as well. Oh my gosh, let me tell you about that, honestly. I hadn't got a machine, so I had to use my books. And I did have to very occasionally, the only times I had to send signals out with my books was when I was messing around, I found out somebody at the other end somewhere. On the end of the telephone, would you believe, he also had the same books as I did, when you haven't got a machine, you know what I mentioned before. And I was town mouse and he was country mouse. And we used to sort of talk to each other and we signal things. It was just, I must keep my hand in practice. He used to do this. But the only time I ever used them seriously when there was a meningitis outbreak that used to come over in code. So let's see what's
even. Where was that outbreak? Where was it?
It didn't. Well, I can't remember. I just got the signal in to say that there's an outbreak of meningitis. It wasn't big skin, yes. It was just somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. I just passed it on. And actually, all the time that I was in during the war, wherever I was doing these ciphering business, I can't honestly remember any of the signals. It was just a job. Type them out. Okay, there you are. It reads all right. Okay. I didn't sort of take it into my mind. Oh, yes. My goodness. It didn't come into it. It was so busy, particularly when I was overseas. But anyway, in Skegness, as I say, I was also the signals officer and telephones. The girls were having problems with the telephones because they had to be there 24 hours. And so I got them some earphones that could line up with their earphones, which I hadn't got before. Otherwise, they'd have to, if it rang, they had to get up. So I thought, well, anything for comfort, you know. So we had, while I was there, we had an exercise. It was for the Eastern Forces. It was to test the defences. And of course, all the way along the beach was the barbed wire, so you couldn't go swimming, obviously. But it was for the defences of the Eastern Command. And the target came from down, whether it was Norfolk or Suffolk, it was somewhere on the East Coast anyway, and this invading force came from the south. And it was a 24-hour exercise, and we had to put up our defences. Now, I hadn't got any cipher machines or anything, so in case of emergency, I was given a crate of pigeons. And my office was upstairs along a passage on the right. There was a fire there. I used to have a fire there every day. And the pigeons and I spent the night in my office. Couldn't sleep. The noise they made, the smell too wasn't all that good. So the next day, I had to send a message off and attach it to the pigeon's legs. And I was shaking like this because it was exciting, but at the same time, it was something new, you know. And we sent them off, and one pigeon went off all right, but the other one landed in the car park, and we had to go outside and point it in the right direction and send it off, so that was a laugh. But everybody was busy, and we kept getting messages in, because the people in Skegness knew this was happening, and they were asked to ring in if there was anything suspicious anywhere. And there were lights out at sea, and they phoned in, so there was lights here, and somebody was using the phone, all sorts of messages.
These are the civilian people at Skegness?
Civilian people sending in messages to our headquarters. And eventually, at the end of the 24 hours, nothing happened. Just nobody came at all. So we sort of, what's the word they use when you not sat down?
Stood down.
Stood down. We were stood down. And so we had breakfast. And I was playing table tennis in this conservatory. And suddenly this black-faced, blacked-up workman, blacked-up, came round the corner, came round like this with his gun. And, oh my God, they've arrived. So we went outside and said, I'm sorry, you're too late. It wasn't shambles. It was really quite an experience. But to see this young fella come round like that and to tell him he was too late was quite deflating. So we took him into breakfast. It was all right. But they didn't get through our defences, so that's all right. And
how was the headquarters structured? The hierarchy kind of.
Well, it was, as I said, all in the hotel, and we were all in the upstairs. The administration was up on the first floor. On the ground floor was the what did they call it? The orderly room, and the dining room. That was downstairs, and the telephone, of course, the girls slept there because they were on shift downstairs, and all the administration was upstairs, so my office was right at the end there, and then across the passage there was the group captain, his adjutant, his, the next man down, the flight lieutenant who did most of the work, sending the messages back, and the secretaries. No, the secretaries would be in the orderly room, wouldn't they? And all the various people that were necessary for the, as you say, the hierarchy. There was the rep officers, of course, because they had to look after the girls and their dibs. I remember in town too, one of the houses had been taken over for the tailors, the people who wanted their uniforms changed or mended or something like that, because I know I had to go there a few times for whatever I bought to get it changed. So it was the whole house, they slept in there as well, but it was a tailoring place. And that was about all, really. It wasn't hard work. It was just a daily routine. Start at 8 o'clock probably, and I know that the men, the orderly room, during every day had to go outside to do their physical jerks, PT, had route marches. I was billeted with a couple in a bungalow. They'd been living on a farm, but they'd come to town to retire, so I was very well fed. And they built themselves in the house. They built a kind of shelter. Well, it was one of the rooms. They'd had it reinforced. And they'd got food in the back there and the water. It must have been somewhere where there was a tap because they had the water and had the food and everything. So when there was an air raid, they used to just go in there. Well, claustrophobic, I couldn't go in there. When there was an air raid and being Nosy Parker, I used to go outside and see what was going on. Which I did this day because a lone German, not a bomber and not a fighter, the one in between, I don't know what it was, was flying home presumably, and he'd still got a bomb left. So he dropped it in the main street in Skegness, it was by the War Memorial, I remember, and it hit the gas main. And it's quite a bit of destruction there. So I went out and had a look. Because I suddenly thought, what am I doing? So I rushed back home into the bungalow, standing by the window, waiting for a door to finish. Oh, and I must have been at home when he dropped the bomb, now I come to think of it. Because I can remember this plane coming down. I was in such a fright. I can remember seeing a bright light, but I can't remember what happened, because the next thing, something landed on the windowsill in front of me. And I thought, oh my God, I'd got my eiderdown around me. I thought, well, this is it. So I shot into bed, went back to sleep. The next morning, I still got it. There was this lump of shrapnel on my windowsill. And I take it with me going to do my talks.
Were there many raids while you were there?
Not while I was there, but there was one just before I went there. The men were all, the ranks were all lined up to go to the Naffy for their lunch. And this lone raider came up and sprayed bullets all across the street and into the queue. And of course after that there was never ever any queues, but it was into the queue and a couple of men were killed. That was before the event. But there was only just that one when I was actually there.
I suppose the station was guarded by someone. And there would be some guards around your hotel or whatever, but nobody to keep.
No, nobody to keep guard. There were people. Well, it was a hotel, I suppose. They just sort of hoped that they didn't realise it was RAF headquarters. No, I never thought of that. I just sort of realised what you said there. No, there wasn't. Nobody. Good gracious.
Do you recall how many of the cipher and code cards about the people who actually were using the machine? You were the only one. There was no others in there with the machines.
There wasn't a machine. I was just using my books there. No, I was the only one. That's why I was code cipher and signals.
So you were the only one doing that side, and the rest of them would be what RAF administration headquarters for the group or area.
For the group. And I do remember when we had this Eastern exercise. One of the boys, he obviously must have been. He would have been signals as well. I think he was a corporal, was he, a sergeant? He said, well, we have got an emergency telephone exchange. This was about a year after I'd been there. I said, oh, where is it? Come with me and I'll show you. Well, I had a bicycle. We both did. We used to bike around everywhere. And he took me to this place. Like, in my mind's eye, I can see it, but I couldn't tell you where it was in Skidness. And in the middle, there was a roadway, a dual carriageway, and in the middle was this kind of, I suppose you might have thought it was an electricity box, fairly biggish. But it was in there. He took me in there, and there was a telephone exchange, and there was their place for people who'd be in, if they were in there long enough. It's quite big, with all the necessary cooking facilities, toilets, and all this kind of thing. It wasn't grand, but a bit pokey. But, I mean, there it was, and I never knew it was there. But anyway, I did know now. That was in case of emergencies, but I had my pigeon, so it was all right.
I was going to ask you, was it telephone communications, or no radio communications at this point?
There must have been. In that little box, there must have been. I don't remember the being, there must have been, because he was signals. Didn't know where he was. They only told me what I needed to know. Didn't learn anything else.
I know you said you couldn't remember the individual codes and things that you worked with, messages. Mm-hmm. But do you recall where most messages went to? Who were you in communication with?
Well, I wouldn't know because that side of it didn't concern me. I do remember once I had to go down to London with, secret wasn't the word, secret material. Material that wasn't for, that had to be destroyed. And here, me, a little WAF officer, I had this gunny sack full of material that had to be, secret material that had to be destroyed. And they gave me my railway warrant and I had to take it down to Air Ministry or whatever. First class, of course. I was travelling first class with my officer. Put it up on the rack and went on down, and I had to get a taxi, took it down with me in the taxi and gave it over to whoever had a sign and all the rest of it. And afterwards I thought to myself, you know, how strange. Normally somebody would, nowadays for instance, it would have gone in a very secure van and everything, but there was me with this little sack of material that was very secret, all the rest of it. So I delivered that. And then I had to stay overnight. They told me where I could go. There were a lot of, in London, probably in all the other cities too, there were, what did they call them? Reception points, probably. I'm getting a bit warm, aren't I? Reception points, and you could go to them. It's like a little kiosk in the streets. I don't ever remember going to a particular house for this, but it was, in my mind, I can think of a kiosk. You went there, and you said, where can I stay for the night? And this wasn't just for the officers, it was for everybody, the forces in London. And they had all these addresses where people could go and stay. Where are you stationed? Okay, go there. And where are you going to? All right, you come here, kind of thing. They had all these addresses. There were women behind there, whether it was WBS or who it was, I can't remember. But they always had these addresses you could go to. So they sent me to this address. And I knew I had to be up early in the morning to get the train back up to Skegness. But you'd never believe this. There were about 6 beds in this room, all ranks. I mean, you just didn't so worry about that. And in the corner of the ceiling, there was a hole like that from the top. And it had gone through there and sort of destroyed all that bit. There was quite a big hole up there where a bomb had either hit or had been damaged or something or other. And it was covered over with, not a tarpaulin, it was covered over. In fact, I didn't think it was covered over with anything. Because I can remember lying in bed and looking at this. I wonder what will happen if it rains. And we only had 2 blankets on the bed, and it must have been winter, and I was freezing cold. But fortunately, oh, I didn't tell you I had a great coat as well. I'd forgotten about that. Of course I did. I had a great coat. It was a great coat. It was very heavy. So I put that on the bed, and I slept. I said, can you wake me in the morning? I'm sorry, we don't have that facility. I thought, how am I going to get up? Well, I was quite a lucky person, because if I said to myself the night before, wake up so-and-so, I did. Got the train, and then I went back home. But when I got to the station, which would be King's Cross, I suppose, I went to the train, and I was looking at all the first-class carriages, because in those days, it would be full, because there were a lot of officers. And the guard was there, walking up and down. Would you like a seat, madam? Yes, please. Well, there's one in here, and you'll never know what happened. I went into this carriage, and on each seat was a coat, and all I can remember are fur coats, but there must have been other coats as well, so these were bagged for people. And you put a coat on mine, and mine was bagged for me, and if a good train doesn't go for an hour, go and get yourself a coffee. So when I came back, there was my seat. It was sort of like a reserved seat. I don't know where you got all these coats for. It was the most extraordinary sight, it really was. So there I was in my first class carriage back up to Skidmore. But I never forget that. They were these secret documents.
Did trains run to timetable at the in June
mostly,
War? They still
mostly.
Kept going at timetable.
Yes. But as I say to people, the most extraordinary thing, I mean, I was in Scotland, I was in Skegness. I went down to Gloucester. That wouldn't apply, going from Skegness to Gloucester. But I from Scott... Oh, I've left out... Oh, I haven't got to Wimbledon. No. Wherever I went, from sort of north to south, we always finished up at Crewe Station. And you know, it wasn't just until recently, in the last 2 or 3 years, I knew where Crewe was. I always imagined that Crewe was in the middle of England, and the trains coming all this, that, and this, that way, always had to stop at Crewe Station, because that was a sort of dropping off place to go north, south, east, and west. But it's way up on the west coast.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's not till recently, I thought, where is Crewe Station? Because of talking about it, I thought, I must find out where it is. But always stopped at Crewe Station, always.
You were there until the October 43, you left Skegness in October 43 for Gloucester. How did that come about?
I was just posted. Either someone got tired of me or they wanted me to shift, or maybe. How long was I up to Skegness? 42, 43, about 18 months. Mm. No, a bit short of 18 months, wasn't I? And I went to Gloucester, 16 months. I think it was just a posting. Actually, I wasn't really doing anything very much. They didn't need a code and cipher officer there. They really didn't. So I was posted down to Gloucester's records office. And it was a very sad posting. Because all the time, all we were doing was deciphering the names of airmen who'd been killed, injured or missing in battle. All the time. And you had to be so careful to get the right number, the airmen to the correct number. It all came in code. I can't remember ever sending anything out because it went from there to the record. Well, of course, we're records officer. It went from there. And that was a 24-hour shift. So, if you were on at night time, the most wonderful thing ever happened to me, to and from work, instead of taking a van or a car or anything like that, it was a motorbike sidecar. Because I was billeted in Gloucester itself. But the records office was out at a place called Buckle Church. So we had to go to and from in this motorbike sidecar. I used to love it, zooming through the night, especially on night duty, zooming through the night in this motorbike sidecar. Never been in one before, never been in one since. I used to love it. And there was cooking facilities there, of course, and everything, but it was quite sad posting.
And what was your, you say that it was just, again, you were just receiving in code names. And were there others doing it as well?
It was a 24-hour shift. There were others. We were living in the county hotel that was taken over by the Air Force during the war. I think it was a county hotel, yes, I'm sure it was. And it's a very nice hotel too. And I shared a room with three other girls. Bathroom next door, all the hotel facilities had our meals there. That's why we had to go to and from to Buckle Church. And also, part of my duty there was admin. I wasn't frightened of talking to the girls or anything like that. I was very shy. And what I had to do, I had to be admin every so often. In fact, I think I had to do that in Skegness. Trying to think where the girls lived in Skegness. But I had to do that in Skegness as well. Every so often I had to be duty officer, which meant going and sleeping in their quarters to make sure that I didn't know what I had to do. They just said, right, your admin duty officer, go in there. Whether I had to go around the rooms or what I was supposed to do, I don't know. I just went there and slept and came away again. But the same with in Gloucester, I had to do the same as well. And opposite our hotel was another big hotel for the other ranks, and we had to go in there and do kit inspections and see that everybody was all right if they needed medical, what have you. And also, some of the girls were billeted in the, I don't know if in Gloucester, if they called it the vicarage or the manse, the Green of Gloucester Cathedral, are you wanting to stop?